You're listening to the public feed of Carefree Highway Revisited, which includes only a portion of this conversation. To hear the complete discussion, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or see the show notes for details.
The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
Say what you will, I will miss you, my friends. Let me move along, for the road never ends. Vowing to live till the end of all time, all the way to the ends of the earth, because I'm waiting for you to say you will be mine. This is Carefree Highway Revisited, the show that celebrates Gordon Lightfoot's music song by song, a proud member of the That's Not Canon podcast network. I'm your host, Mike Messner, and with me today is a fellow Lightfoot fan and a good friend, making her fourth appearance on the show, from Kippewa, Quebec, Adele Chalifou. Adele, it's great to see you again, and I'm glad you were able to make time because I know it is very, very cold up where you are right now.
It is very cold. Actually, it's like an El Nino year, so things are not normally as nice as they have been, I should say. We just got snow, really, for the first time since October, since Halloween, a week or two ago, so it's been actually quite nice, but the lake's not frozen over. It's not as cold as some places in the States, I hear, right now, but it's about minus 25 last night, so it's pretty cold, I guess, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was watching a football game one or two nights ago where it was supposedly, if you factor in the wind chill, it was 27 below zero.
Oh, yeah.
And as a California kid, I mean, that doesn't register. I mean, we do not weather that cold in
this pretty cold
Bay Area. Yeah, but that is pretty cold. So today we're talking about Waiting for You, which of course is the title track to Gordon's 1993 album. But it's not a song that's particularly well known in the Lightfoot canon. And I know for me, I love it because it's a return to form in some ways. This is folk music. It has an Irish flavor to it. The instrumentation is the way he used to do it back before Endless Wire and Salute and all of those. And the man still sounds like he's in his 30s. I mean, I think he's in his mid-50s when he did this. But his voice still sounds like the Lightfoot that we all got hooked on when he first became a phenomenon or when he first started his career. So that's why I love the song. Why did you want to talk about it in particular today?
I've just always loved this song. It reminds me of, well, home. It reminds me of all things Canada. It reminds me of Gordon is so great at giving us such vivid depictions of places and things, and it just reminds me of our weather, how beautiful our country is, our geography. I'm a lover of the snow, so that is worked in there. And our skies, you know, we have beautiful starlit skies, and especially where I am, there's no light, so pitch black and you can see almost everything. It evokes a lot of images of my own travels across the country, and whether that's driving or flying. And it's sad that this song isn't more well known, because I think it's just beautiful, really.
It really is a beautiful song. Yeah. And we'll come back to why it's not well known a little bit later. I think you have sort of an anecdote about this song, though. I'm not talking about when it was originally released, but it does have a special significance for you because of a particular part of your life, doesn't it?
It does, actually. Yeah, it absolutely does. And I was about 5 when this song came out, so I was a little too young to remember it. But I have a 2-year-old child. Toddler, feral at this point. But when I was pregnant with him, this song just played through my mind a lot. And especially the last couple of lines, some soft-hearted lovers whose goals are in sight. My husband and I, we live in the bush on a lake and surrounded by nature. And we would go and sit on the end of the dock and dangle our feet in the water. And I was very, very pregnant at this time. And that line just always ran through my head. And, you know, as he touched my stomach and we felt the baby kicking and all that stuff, you know, it just reminded me of that line. It was just so poignant, you know, whose goals are in sight. I was set to have my son anytime. And it's just such a personal song and feeling. And I always think of that. Whenever that line comes on, I smile a little bit. Thank God I'm not pregnant anymore. But, you know, it brings me back to that time.
Yeah. The pregnancy probably had aspects that weren't all that fun. But I can certainly understand why you wanted to talk about it, because it really does come to the heart of who you are as a Canadian and also as a mom with that particular line. Besides sitting on the dock with your feet in the water, is there a particular setting that you think this would be perfect to listen to?
I think for me, it would be, you know, driving on a road trip or anywhere just quiet. I think this is one of the songs, one of many of Gord's songs, that you just really need to listen to the lyrics, because they are pretty poetic and beautiful, and there's a lot of lyrics there. So just a quiet place to really think about it and just let those images come to the forefront and just see what happens. That's for me where I would listen to it.
For me, it's one of the relatively few songs where there's no specific time, place, activity that's conjured up for me. Now, part of that is because it doesn't have the same kind of deep resonance for me as it does for you. But this is a song that I think I could probably listen to on a hot summer day driving through the Central Valley, or on a rainy day here in California, or on a plane heading east somewhere. I could probably listen to it anywhere and enjoy it. It just wouldn't evoke the same smells, the same visions, the same kind of sensory stuff that many of his songs do evoke. It just takes you just to some particular place and time in your life. Mm-hmm. Now, the song itself, of course, it came out in 1993 on the Waiting for You album. We don't know quite when it was written, but Gordon did say he was doing a recorded song in Reno, Nevada in 2003. And he introduced the song by saying, "This is about making babies in the North Country." And he was probably being a little tongue-in-cheek about that, because it's not a particularly sexy song. It's not a sensual song in the sense of being sultry. And we know that Gordon has written some songs that probably could go in that kind of movie.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, he certainly has a heart for that, or had a heart for that. It doesn't strike me as a particularly romantic song, but it does sound like a song about home, about domesticity, about raising a family. And he did dedicate the album to his son, Miles, and his then wife, Elizabeth. But we don't know a whole lot about the specifics of how it got written. I have a quotation from him on it, but is there anything you wanted to add before I read that?
I couldn't really find a lot. I looked in a couple of books, and I looked in the Nicholas Jennings book, and I also looked in Once Upon a Red Eye, and there wasn't much written other than what you've said. So I think that's true to a lot of his stuff. It's all kind of shrouded in a little bit of mystery, which kind of adds more to the intrigue about his recordings and things. But maybe he was homesick when he wrote this song. Maybe he was flying back from a gig. Other than that, no, I couldn't find anything about it.
He does allude to the idea that he's flying back from a gig, and that means that he's anticipating being home, and whether that's homesickness or not. He did say, and I'm quoting from the songbook liner notes, "The concept of flying at night is very strong in there," that is, in the song. "We're coming home from a gig and flying back to Toronto, as we do after almost every show," because Lightfoot would go fly out, play the gigs, and then be back home for the bulk of the week. At least that's what Richard Harrison had said. "I was writing a batch of songs, and we were traveling at night a lot then, but it has other imagery in there as well. There's even a little of the USS Arizona when I wrote, 'We could be trapped between decks eternally.' How something about Pearl Harbor made it in there, I'm not quite sure. Maybe it was the fact that war in the Middle East was brewing," end quote. So that says to me that he probably wrote it in 90 or 91, because that was when the Gulf War was about to happen, or had started happening, although it was a very, very short war. So that may give us a clue about when it was written, but it certainly gives us the idea of returning home to some degree or another. I still don't know how he worked Pearl Harbor into it. It's one of those things we'll never know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you could be right about the timing of the song, because I did read that the album took him about 2.5 years to write all the material for. So that would put it in line with the early 90s, as you said. And who knows with Gordon, he was such a smart man and he saw so many things and traveled so many places. He was probably just like a sponge. And I think his life experiences and everything just kind of all seeped its way into his music in one way or another. And he did love sailing. You know, he has a big connection with water. So all of it, probably.
Yeah. But this does make me think that this song could have been on Edge of Midnight, because when he was making that album, this is back in 86, he had announced or alluded or implied that this was going to be it. He was not going to have any more solo albums after this. In as much as this is a song about going home, and this is a good way to get into the lyrics, say what you will, I will miss you, my friends. So he's saying goodbye to something and someone, and that was kind of the tone of East of Midnight, and it winds up here, and thank God it did, because it's a beautiful song. But it does make me think that this is something that is a farewell, but it's also for somebody that we know is just returning, because he had like a 7-year hiatus between East of Midnight and then Waiting for You. Any thoughts on that first part of the lyrics?
I think you hit it right on. I've never made that connection before, but I think it could definitely be that. And he, you know, at that point in the 90s, as you said, I think he was almost 30 years into his career. He's probably said goodbye to a lot of people over the years and knew a lot of people over the years, whether that's friendships, career-wise, relationships. So it could be that. To me, it also makes me think of his constant touring and being on the road. And I mean, he toured right up until the end of his life, really. So one place after the other, after the other, after the other, you know, that connection with the audience, I think, is something that us mere mortals don't necessarily understand. You might look at them as friends after. So for me, that's what it brings into my mind. And it also makes me think perhaps it could be analogy for him growing as a person, because the 90s Gordon wasn't the same as the 60s and 70s Gordon, that's for sure. So it could also be that code for him growing as a person in every kind of which way as well. So it's a deep line. I don't think we'll ever know exactly the root of it.
But it is a beautiful way to start a song. And you're right that every audience that he performed for, at some point he had to say goodnight. I got to go to sleep. Our time is up. We got to go. It's late, etc. So along with the joy of performing, there's also the reality of the curtain's got to fall. The audience has to leave. So there is a certain goodbye to it. Vowing to live till the end of all time, all the way to the ends of the earth, because I'm waiting for you to say you will be mine. So now he's talking to one specific person, and it's ostensibly his wife, Elizabeth, at the time. Mm-hmm. It sounds like he's concerned that she won't be his. I don't know how long they had been together. We don't really know when this song was written. So I'm wondering, why do you think he has this concern?
I'm not sure. I think ultimately he was such a hopeless romantic, and romance was, I think, always played huge on his mind. This is definitely in his music. Maybe he was a little, I don't want to say worried that maybe she would leave him, but not a lot is known about Elizabeth Moon. I have seen a few pictures and she was absolutely stunning. She was just, oh my God, she was beautiful. So maybe that could have played into it. And I know there was like a 20 or so year age gap. So maybe that played into it a little bit, insecurity. Maybe he was just hoping that they were going to be together until the very end. He had his fair share of quite tumultuous relationships by then. So maybe it was just him kind of being hopeful in a poetic way.
Yeah, or he had been burned so badly. He'd been married once, that didn't work out. And he'd been burned badly in romance that maybe he's thinking to himself, this is too good to be true. I'm with this beautiful woman who's willing to have my children, et cetera, et cetera. And he's thinking to himself, yeah, how on earth did I get so lucky to do this?
I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Many long days, many long years, many wrong plays, many wrong fears. This is a quick retrospective of his career at this point. And it's vague enough so that he's not getting into it, but he's kind of saying in so many words, wow, I've had quite a career.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think at that point, 30 years in, and being an older man at that point, he was in his 50s, I think, you know, you become more insightful over the years. I know I'm in my mid-30s, and I can look back on things in my life and go, oh, you know, I did that, or that was not a good choice, whatever it may be. So he for sure got more insightful as the years gone by, and probably more honest and humble about the mistakes and the things he had been through in his life. That's what it feels like to me he's talking about there, which is so relatable.
To say midlife crisis is probably a little bit too easy, because that's kind of a cliche, but it is something that men talk about to the extent that they're intimate with each other verbally. They do talk about this idea of that you get to your late 40s, your mid 50s, you've achieved XXX, you've made mistakes with YYY, and then you realize, I don't have that much time left. And what do I do either to make up for it? What do I do to check things off the bucket list? We know that men tend to live a little less long than women do chronologically. So there's a certain amount of catharsis that he may have been going through at that particular time. Thankfully, he doesn't dwell on it in this particular song, because that would have sent the song into something that I don't want to listen to this. I'm not in this to hear your confessional. You know, that's something for another song. Well, that's all the time we have for Here in the Public Feed. If you'd like to hear the rest of this conversation, along with all of our other extended and bonus episodes, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or at fmpods.com. You can see the show notes for details.